In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. Must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
With the McDonald's app, you can get your favorite thing delivered to your door. So if you were looking for a reason to skip washing those dishes you left in the sink, consider this a sign. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Right now, get $0 delivery fee with any purchase of $15 or more, only in the app. At participating McDonald's, minimum purchase excludes tax and service fees. Delivery prices may be higher than in restaurants. Other fees may apply, not valid with any other offer, discount, or coupon.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, a documentary filmmaker describes the horrors of child sex trafficking and how shockingly common it is.
500,000 kids every day are involved in child sex trafficking. That's a conservative number. In the U.S. only, worldwide, it's something like 22 million or something.
If you enjoy Conspiracy Unlimited, why not become a Conspiracy Unlimited Plus member? For just $1.99 per month, you'll gain access to 2 bonus, exclusive, commercial-free episodes per month, plus access to my back catalog of episodes. That's over 350 episodes. To subscribe, just go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Gain Access to Premium Episodes. Again, go to conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com and click on Get Access to Premium Episodes, or click on the link in the episode notes. Conspiracy Unlimited Plus, for less than $2 per month. Why not sign up today?
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs, here's Richard Serrett.
Welcome to your Wednesday. I hope you and yours are doing well. Now, just a reminder, I'll be sitting in for George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM this coming Friday, October 16th, and I'll also be hosting Coast again on Saturday, October the 17th. Go to coasttocoastam.com for more information and to find an affiliate near you, coasttocoastam.com. There is a sinister wickedness encompassing the country. It doesn't fit any profile, it doesn't lend to predictability, and it strikes without warning. While this specific evil may sound familiar, and though millions of lives have been brutalized, very few understand how deep it goes. Child sex trafficking is only the beginning. There's an organized occult effort that sometimes uses these children as sacrifices to ancient, bloodthirsty, demonic entities. Never before has a documentary dared to expose the true depths of this dangerous evil. Josh Peck is the director and writer of Silent Cry, The Dark Side of Trafficking. Josh works in full-time ministry with Skywatch TV as a documentary filmmaker, and he wrote, directed, and edited Silent Cry. He's also the author or co-author of numerous best-selling books, including Afterlife, The Second Coming of the New Age, The Day the Earth Stands Still, Unraveling the Multiverse, and Abaddon Ascending. He's the founder of Daily Renegade, where he hosts The Peck Report. Hey, Josh, welcome to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Richard, for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Silent Cry, The Darker Side of Trafficking. Kind of hard to watch, but this really needs to be seen by everyone, not just parents. Everybody needs to see this. Talk to me about the genesis of this project for you. I guess it goes back to Tom Horn and his latest book, Shadowland.
Yes, it deals a little bit with his book, Shadowland. We do get into that. Shadowland is more about government corruption and some of the secret things going on, including cover-ups of child sex trafficking cases. So there is some overlap there. But Silent Cry really focuses on child sex trafficking, but it's not the typical trafficking documentary that's out there today. So trafficking is happening everywhere in America because largely, it's been ignored, so that's why it's able to continue. But it goes deeper because, as we show in the film, there's also an occultism tied in with some of trafficking. So we deal with that. So that's kind of where the overlap with Tom Horn's book, Shadowland, is. But so we really wanted to look at this topic not in a sensational way, but not in a sugar-coated way either. So we definitely don't hold back, but everything that we put in the movie, we cite sources, we're honest about what things are just eyewitness testimonies and what things can be verified with other evidences. So we try to be really careful, but it's also not just statistically driven as many child sex trafficking documentaries are. There's nothing wrong with that. We need the statistics. We need to know the facts. But in my opinion, a lot of the documentaries that are out there are kind of missing the human emotion element of it. And so I wanted to bring that into this topic, and hopefully have done so in Silent Cry.
It begins with a cult called the Finders in Tallahassee, Florida in 1987. Tell me about the Finders.
Yeah, absolutely. So the reason that I started with this cult, the Finders cult, in the beginning of the film is that many people think that we should look to the government to solve this problem for us. But we have examples showing the government has been complicit in covering up and even in some cases perpetrating this crime, even going back decades. And the Finders case is one of the best examples. Now, on the surface, it sounds like conspiracy theory, but in 2018 and 2019, the FBI declassified nearly 650 heavily redacted pages relating to this group known as the Finders, which contains evidence that the State Department and CIA was at best complicit, at worst directly involved, and conspired to keep to cover up investigation and charges. So at the time, in 1987, the official story was it was really short and simple. It was basically that this group called the Finders were a post-hippie commune of off-the-grid futurists. They were discovered in 1987 in Tallahassee, Florida, when a woman saw six malnourished children with two well-dressed men at the park. Something didn't seem right about it, so she called the police. And then 2 weeks after that call was made, the entire case was dropped, largely forgotten, until these documents were recently released. Now, there have been a few people who have been researching it since then, but now we can actually see the official story at the time was completely fabricated, and the people that were researching it in the years since were actually onto something. So these documents say a lot about the finders that wasn't previously released. There's still a lot we don't know because, again, it is heavily redacted. But from what we can piece together, just based on what the documents say, we can definitely show there was a cover-up. So we do tell the whole story in the movie, but we can hit some of the highlights here. The police brought those two men and children into custody. The two men were questioned. They were uncooperative. They didn't provide ID for themselves or the kids. They were unable to prove the children belonged to them. And while they were in custody, it was discovered that there was another finder's case in Washington, D.C. So police had searched properties belonging to the finders and found hand-drawn pentagrams. They found over 100 animal bones. And then there was other undisclosed pieces of evidence of satanic cult rituals. That's just how the documents describe them. They also found cages that witnesses said were used to keep children in during their visits. So while that is in the documents it does say that these were just what eyewitnesses said. So we have to take that for what it is. It's just eyewitness account, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's not true. There were also documents found on the finder's property containing instructions for obtaining children, impregnating women, purchasing, kidnapping, trading children, really weird things. So the government documents from unnamed investigators expressed a suspicion that the finders were actually being used by the U.S. government on a state and federal level. And they reached that conclusion because a member of the finders named Isabella was discovered to have worked for the U.S. government from 1950 to 1971. So this goes back at least a few decades. What's most disturbing, though, is there was proof of child abuse that was found in these documents and in medical reports from the time that wasn't released to the public at the time. It was actually lied about at the time. But while police were questioning the children that were with the two men at the park, the kids described seeing strange things where they lived with this cult. They described women walking around naked. They described their leader named the Game Caller, whose real name was Marion Petty. And this guy would tell these children to do strange things like read random bulletin boards, take notes, and more disturbingly, babysit children. But during that interview, the children were clearly not well. They were extremely hungry and malnourished. They were so sick that they urinated and defecated on the floor. So because of that, the children were medically examined, and at least two of them that we know about, we only have first names, Max and Mary, were confirmed cases of sexual abuse. Now, the details and evidence of the sexual abuse are really explicit. We do get into it in the movie only because it's in the documents and we want to be truthful to what's in the official documents. So we do deal with that in the movie, not to be sensational, but just to be truthful. But the form detailing that abuse from the medical examination has an original date of February 4th, 1987. And we even know that a copy was made on February 9th, 1987. The reason that's important is because on February 18th, this would have been just 2 weeks after the confirmation of sexual abuse was discovered, the entire case against the Finders cult was dropped. No arrests were made. The two men had all charges against them dropped, and the children were even sent back with no attempts of rehabilitation or even foster care. An affidavit written either on or after February 5th, so a day or more after the child abuse was discovered, this affidavit stated that the children were all examined for sexual abuse, but the results were not available at this time, which we know today was a lie because we have clear evidence that an offense report was made at least a day earlier. But it gets worse. Where the documents explained why this investigation was called off, no arrests were made and any previous charges were dropped, it actually states that there was no evidence of child sexual exploitation, no evidence of kidnapping or related crime, and no evidence of satanic activity. But now that we have these documents, we can prove that that was an outright lie. There was at least evidence. Maybe it was enough to prove something, maybe not, but there was evidence. It was also reported that the lifestyle choice of the finders was subjective, that there was nothing objectively wrong, abusive, or neglectful, even though the police and medical reports show that they were starved and withheld medical attention and sexually abused. So I wanted to open the movie with this whole case because it shows that these things do happen, and higher ups will shut these cases cases down. And this is a really good example that we have. Even in the documents, the investigators that were first looking into the case, you can read their frustration on them being told to shut down. And they didn't know who the order was coming from or why. They just had to let it go. And so we get some suspicions from the original investigators saying that they believed the Finders cult was still active in the government, that they believed it never disbanded. So that makes us wonder, are they still active in the government today? And what atrocities are going on now that we won't have absolute proof of due to the release of federal and state documents for another 30 years. So this is why we can't trust the government to solve this problem for us.
There was another element to this story, and that is that these children appeared to be programmed almost like a Nazi MK Ultra type situation.
Yes, and we read about that in the investigator's notes in these documents as well. So this is what happened afterwards, because somebody, you know, would probably wonder, why didn't somebody try to expose what was going on? Well, some of these investigators did. All of the evidence was ignored and dismissed without any real answer given. So we know there was at least a cover-up, but why is another question. The best we have is the speculation from someone who appears to be close to the case, who expressed his suspicions in an official report from the domestic security branch of the police department in DC. So he writes that he believed the Finders was utilized by the CIA as a disinformation service. He says that they're capable of destructive and illegal activities. He refers to them as a cult. And he says that he didn't believe the sexual abuse of children was originally planned, but it sprung up later due to sick and demented subjects who belonged to the cult, meaning that when that happened, the government turned a blind eye to it. They knew about it, but they just let it go because whatever the Finders cult was doing for the government was more important. This investigator also said that he believed the shaping of the children or the programming of the children was a planned experiment, such as the Nazis, and he actually refers to it as that, word for word, such as the Nazis towards a perfect society in the documents. He also, like I mentioned before, he said he didn't believe that the Finders ever disbanded, which again makes us wonder if they're still active. So it's really horrific that the levels of corruption in the government go this deep, but it takes a long time for them to come to light. By the time they do come to light, you know, it's 30 years later, most people have forgotten about that case. Most people at the time weren't even aware of it, but even less people now are. So it's a really good example of just how corrupt the government still probably is. I mean, unless we're just going to assume that for some reason since that case, the government has decided to clean up their act, but I don't see any evidence of that. You know, we know we have a deep state that is involved in these things due to the release of these documents providing evidence for that.
You mentioned in Silent Cry, the darker side of trafficking, that during your research, it was somewhat difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff. There are a lot of conspiracy theories in this horrible arena. And recently, Congress condemned the followers of a so-called conspiracy theory revolving around QAnon, this secretive individual who very active on social media, sort of central to QAnon's, ideology is that there is this widespread child sex trafficking operation going on involving very highly ranked individuals in government. Yet, you know, that is being condemned by Congress as a cult and a ridiculous conspiracy theory. Yet it certainly seems to ring true with the research that you're finding.
Yeah, it does. And it would make sense if it is true that Congress would say that this is all conspiracy theory and all cult. And that's what makes this, you know, especially with this topic, really hard to research and hard to separate truth from fiction, because, you know, one bit of sensationalism, one bit of untruth can literally mean the life and death of a child. It can mean that someone out there now has an excuse to dismiss all of this, whereas we might have had somebody fighting this fight with us and trying to get things changed in this country. Now we don't have that person because they saw a ridiculous piece of misinformation and they labeled the entire thing as that. And so now children are suffering even more. So it does make it really hard. I will say I don't know that much about the QAnon movement, but so far in my very, very limited and admittedly ignorant exposure to it, I haven't found anything that has necessarily put me off. But again, I don't really know much about it. I will say that there is a very strong effort right now to demonize anybody who is wanting to talk about the problem of child sex trafficking in our country, the horrors of it, the statistics behind it, the well-founded statistics even. And in the movie, I was even really careful and used conservative numbers with these statistics because I don't want to be accused of sensationalizing anything. And you know what's strange is I'm typically labeled, even like I'm a conservative, even in my own like mainstream conservative friends of mine who host shows that have like millions of viewers, I've been told that they can't have me on because they'll lose credibility. They kind of allude that like I'm now part of this QAnon thing, which I'm not. I don't know anything about it. Maybe I am and I don't know. You know, there's just a lot I don't know about it, so I can't say one or another. But I do have friends involved in it. I haven't seen anything particularly harmful or cultish or conspiracy theory ridden about it. Actually, the people that seem to be the most careful seems to be these people. But again, I'm speaking very, very limitedly because I only know a few people that are interested in it. There was recently an article put out by Vice saying basically how to talk to your friends if they've fallen into the conspiratorial hole of believing that child sex trafficking is a major problem in our country. And I was curious, you know, I like hearing both sides of an issue, and I'm pretty open-minded. I read this thing and it was one of the most insulting things I've ever read. I mean, they are just straight up denying that child sex trafficking is even a problem. They have gone so far the other end. And they deny that the mainstream media is covering anything up or that the mainstream media is refusing to talk about it. You know, maybe cover up is too strong of a word, but they're at least not excited about talking about this issue. And in the article, Vice says that mainstream media is open to it, including them. And I'm thinking, okay, but your article right here is disproving that statement because you're saying that this is all conspiracy. So clearly you're not open to talking about it. You're open to talk about it in the sense that all these people are nuts and they need to be talked down to like children and here's how to handle them and all of this. But all the while, they didn't provide anything refuting why they believe that the stats aren't correct. You know, they'll just say, well, you know, the stats that are quoted aren't government sources. But that's a lie. They are. Like the stats that we give in Silent Cry, for example, they come from both government and non-government research sources. So, you know, things like Pew or ShareTogetherNow.org, you know, places like that actually specialize in child sex trafficking and learning the numbers. And we even say in the movie that stats are hard to get because it's only 1% of this crime is ever even reported. So we have to estimate. And that's why in the movie I used more conservative estimates just to play it safe. But even the conservative estimates are horrifying. 500,000 kids every day are involved in child sex trafficking. That's a conservative number. I've heard numbers.
That's in the U.S. only.
Yeah, in the U.S. only. Worldwide, it's something like 22 million or something.
Every single day.
Yeah. And I don't want to be misquoted here because I've had people in the reviews on Amazon misquote me and say that that I said or that Yaakov Bunyans, who is in the film, said that 500,000 kids are being kidnapped every day. But that's not what we said. That's not what is happening. It's just the market for child sex trafficking today at any given point every day consists of about 500,000 kids. So that's not 500,000 new ones being added every day. today. But that's typically what I've seen in the reaction to this film. Most people say, you know, that it's well done, it's careful, but it doesn't hold back. And then you'll get a couple of people who you can tell that they already think all of this is a conspiracy theory. So to debunk the film, they have to misquote the stats. So we've seen a little bit of that reaction to it. But most people that watch it, I think they're going to find a very fair and balanced movie, but also something that absolutely isn't going to hold back, and it's going to be able to tell the viewer not only what's going on, but what steps each and every one of us can take in order to start mitigating against this and turn our culture back around and away from the direction that it's going now, which is the normalization of pedophilia and the sexual exploitation of children.
It seems that you mentioned Vice calling all of this a conspiracy theory, and in the mainstream media too, this is happening, that they focus on certain details, and so they dismiss the story, but the overall narrative is true. The details might be wrong in this case or that case. So, for example, yep. Pizzagate, right. After the DNC emails were hacked, and we had suggestions that certain people in the DNC were involved, and the language they were using in those emails was consistent with child sex trafficking rings. This pizza place in Washington was cited perhaps as a hub of child sex trafficking. There were rather odd murals on the walls and so forth. And so the media seemed to focus on Pizzagate, and then every story that comes along, oh, here we go, another Pizzagate. So again, a specific story or a specific detail might be wrong, but the overall narrative, it's hard to deny.
Yeah, absolutely. And I should mention, too, speaking of Pizzagate, that we did do a bonus DVD with one of the speakers from the film. If people go to skywatchtvstore.com and buy the film, Silent Cry, The Darker Side of Trafficking, they'll get a bunch of bonus materials. And one of those is a shorter documentary that we did about the truth of Pizzagate. We strip off all of the sensationalism, and we stick with the things that can actually be verified. You know, we try to do a very careful job at showing where these threads lead and what things we can say and what things are speculative. But we were able to show in that film that there is at least enough here to be suspicious. It might not be enough to convict anybody of anything, but there's definitely a lot of questions that have gone unanswered, and those questions are things the mainstream media do not ask people like Alifantis or John Podesta or Hillary Clinton or any of these people. You know, even on Fox News, when Alifantis was interviewed, they gave him a bunch of softball questions, and they never really asked him anything real. There are real things that need to be asked. You know, what is up with those murals? What is the story behind the Instagram picture of the kill room, and why were jokes like that being made? You know, why are there these strange pictures circulating of children on his own page? And why is now his Instagram totally private? And there's a lot of things that we lay out in the film and even in the WikiLeaks. You know, why were these it seems like there were code words used. Why are things worded like this? How can a handkerchief have a map on it that's pizza related? That doesn't make sense. You know, that's not a normal way of speaking. So there's a lot of questions that have gone unanswered, and we deal with those in that bonus film. It's called Fake News or Hidden Truths, and it's featuring Stephen Bancars. He's an investigative researcher himself. He actually came out of occultism. He's a Christian now, but he's in the film Silent Cry, and he's also in that bonus film. But you're absolutely right. I mean, these mainstream media, I think that they already have their mind made up, and a lot of times they base their decision on what will gain them more credibility or what will benefit them the most, what's more self-serving. They're like some of my friends who won't have me on their show because it'll hurt their credibility. They think it'll hurt their credibility if they do. And to me, you know, I would just ask, well, what's more important, your credibility or these children that, you know, we need to get the word out somehow. So I do want to thank you for being one of the few that's actually willing to have me on and talk openly about this issue, because even some of these other, you know, more mainstream conservative guys, and like I said, I'm a conservative myself, but even some of them, they won't even have me on, even if they, I would say, hey, disagree with me, you know, let's talk about our agreements and disagreements, because I know that in the film, we do deal with the occult, but you don't have to believe in any occult connections to know that this is a growing problem. And if we don't do something about it, if we don't raise awareness and get the word out about it, it's going to continue to grow as it has the past few decades, actually even earlier than that, because this is an ancient problem, basically since the beginning of human history. But specifically in our country, we can date it back at least decades, but it probably goes back even further than that. So I think it's time we get together and do something about it.
More of my conversation with Josh Peck when Conspiracy Unlimited returns.
Overwhelmed by investing?
If you're anything like us, the hardest part is getting started. That's why we created the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Our goal is to help simplify money so it can work for you.
We invite guests to demystify investing.
At least try to be setting aside like the minimum 10% into the 401k.
We'll teach you the basics of the market.
Yeah, I think compound interest should be at the start of any discussion about investing. And
we've had investment professionals who teach in a simple way.
A valuation-driven bear market. You know, we haven't really seen yet, and I think everyone's thinking about it, but we haven't really seen yet.
Our Q&A episodes feature questions from listeners just like you.
So what do you think about the situation with ETBI, which is Activision?
I'm Dave Ahern.
And I'm Andrew Sather.
And we hope you join us on the Investing for Beginners podcast.
On the Investing for Beginners podcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive?
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator?
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you. Now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Clinky County 911.
There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I'm a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
Have you ever wondered why we call French fries French fries? Or why something is the greatest thing since sliced bread? There are answers to those questions. Everything Everywhere Daily is a podcast for curious people who want to learn more about the world around them. Every day you'll learn something new about things you never knew you didn't know. Subjects include history, science, geography, mathematics, and culture. If you're a curious person and want to learn more about the world you live in, just subscribe to Everything Everywhere Daily, wherever you cast your pod.
The discovery of carbon-60 is likely to be the most amazing chemistry discovery of the late 20th century. And my friends at c60evo.com are the world's number one manufacturer of C60, the safe, consumable form of pure C60 is called ESS60, and the mighty Aphrodite and I take a tablespoon every morning. ESS60 is the C60 formulation used in the famous 2012 original Paris study that showed ESS60 doubled the lifespan of rats. ESS60 from C60evo.com is raw C60 that's been produced, certified, and guaranteed for safe human consumption. ESS60 from C60evo.com is a powerful molecule that acts as a nano antioxidant to attract, stabilize, and neutralize free radicals. It's also known to have 172 times the antioxidant power of vitamin C, 172 times, which may be why people are feeling healthier on C60. All I know is the mighty Aphrodite and I are sleeping great and we're both pain-free. To get your bottle of ESS60, go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the C60evo.com link. Use the code RS1SPEC to get 5% off. RS1SPEC and get 5% off. It's time to start taking responsibility for your health. Time to support your immune system. Join the mighty Aphrodite and I. If you want more energy, mental clarity, and a great night's sleep, ESS60 from C60evo.com. Again, go to the episode notes and click on the C60evo.com link and use the promo code RS1SPEC to get 5% off.
The truth goes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Then, it is violently opposed. Finally, it is accepted as self-evident.
Let me just read that again, what that means.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
Josh Peck, the director of Silent Cry, is here. There's a filmmaker and actor in Silent Cry, the darker side of trafficking, who's delved into this, done some research, and he actually sort of pinpointed the exact neighborhood in Atlanta, Georgia, that seems to be sort of central to sex trafficking in the United States. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. David Heavener, he's a producer, actor, musician, filmmaker, and in the film, he does for work now, basically, is he speaks openly about sex trafficking. I was actually just on his show last night, even. He speaks openly pretty often about this because he's seen this stuff firsthand and sees how it works in association with Hollywood. You know, he's a Christian, and he works with victims of trafficking and satanic ritual abuse, and he does not hold back. He does give details about where in Atlanta, and specifically the airports, how the airports are utilized, which a lot of people might or might not know. Some of that information is readily available, but his insider's perspective is really valuable to the film. He even had one of the most heartbreaking stories I've ever heard. If people are familiar with the Shonda Cher case, her mom was recently on Dr. Phil. Basically, this young girl was brutally raped, killed, set on fire by these other girls who were involved in what was described originally as satanic and lesbian circles. Well, Shonda Cher was David's cousin. And so David Heavener, from his perspective, tells the whole story and kind of gives an inside perspective of, you know, who this girl was and just her tragic death. And he believes, he's come away with that believing that this is likely a satanic ritual abuse situation where these girls were ritually abused in some way and programmed to do this. And, you know, I know people fall on all, you know, two different sides of that aisle. Some people either completely believe like everything they read about satanic ritual abuse. But I will say, like everything else, there is some sensationalism, and you're going to find that with everything. But then you have other people who totally deny that anything about it is real. And that's a problem, too. In the film, we kind of try to stick with what we can know, which is difficult because, again, a lot of the satanic connection stuff, we have to go by eyewitness accounts. We're really honest about that in the film. And we do say, you know, we don't have video evidence of this stuff, at least not that has been verified yet. There might be evidence like that exists. But We haven't been able to verify anything for sure yet. And a big problem with it is whenever evidence like that does turn up, it tends to get covered up, such as in Finder's case. I mean, you know, the pentagrams, the animal bones, and then the several other pieces of undisclosed satanic cult ritual evidences. We don't know what they even are because it was covered up. So that still happens. So we have to rely on eyewitness testimonies, which to some people, that's not convincing. But to others, when they watch the film, they'll realize, you know, these stories are coming from children who have been rescued from trafficking. And there is a small percent. It is a small percentage of kids that will talk about the occultic ties. So it's not, you know, the occultism isn't as big of a problem as sex trafficking itself. You know, the satanic ritual abuse, but it still is a problem and it still is growing. And the kids that talk about it, they're rescued from all over the country and they will describe the same elements of the ritual. They will describe what they wore. They'll describe the same robes. They'll describe the symbols, even draw them, the symbols that they saw strewn about and used in these rituals. So to me, that makes me wonder, well, how would they know that? Like they don't have the ability to network. Some of these kids are as young is 5, 6, 7 years old. They don't have the ability to network with each other and come up with this grand lie, you know, this grand conspiracy to trick all the adults. That doesn't make sense to me. And at the same time, someone might think, well, the investigators are lying then, you know, the people who are involved in and, you know, supposedly working with these kids, maybe they're lying and exaggerating. Well, again, the same problem would come up. They would all have to be networking. So that would mean that there's no whistleblowers in that group. And there's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of investigators that work with kids rescued from satanic ritual abuse. And somehow nobody has blown the whistle and saying, hey, guys, this is all exaggerated. This is all fake and have gone and told the public, which would be, I mean, if anybody did that and if that was real, that person would be highly congratulated in our current culture, because our current culture is looking at this to be a conspiracy. So not only do you have that, you would have to have all of these investigators networking with each other to say the same thing. And they're also, many of these guys, this is what they do for a living. So they're putting their livelihood on the lie for what? On the line for what? You know, for some lie to trick everybody. It doesn't make sense. I'm not saying that it's completely impossible, but it doesn't make sense. What makes the most sense is these kids are getting rescued and the stories that they tell are likely true. So we do talk about that in the film. But again, like I said, it when it comes to the satanic connections, most of what we have to go on is eyewitness testimony. So it's up to the viewer when they watch the movie if they're going to find those testimonies convincing or not. But as I said before, even if they don't find the connections of satanic ritual abuse convincing, they don't have to believe in the occult connections to understand that child sex trafficking is a growing problem in our country. And it's going to be up to us as individuals, because we can't trust the government. It's going to be up to us to raise awareness, to stand against this constant perversion of our culture, to not support sexual perversion with our money, you know, stop buying pornography for one thing, because there is a direct connection between pornography and child sex trafficking. We talk about that in the movie, but anybody can just search for that on Google and get numerous articles. And so there are things that we can do in our own lives. But really what it boils down to is just getting at the truth. And then if there's something we don't know, being honest enough to say we don't know. Like I said with the eyewitness testimonies, I can't prove that. I can offer what I think is convincing evidence. It's convincing to me, the testimonies are, because of how well they correlate. But I can't prove it. So when I post about it online, I don't post about it and act as if this is absolute truth. And if you don't believe me, then you're not really part of the movement or something. You know, right. I don't do that.
Well, even in the absence of absolute proof, in the absence right. of occult paraphernalia or satanic symbols, I mean, as a Christian, I would say that by its very nature, the act is satanic.
Yes.
Cut, you know, pure and simple.
Yes.
But as you say, you know, you can take the occult or paranormal or whatever you want to say aspect out of this, but you have to be absolutely, you know, horrified by the act itself. The other is it's just something else that you can tack onto it. I want to talk a little bit about Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah.
Which is featured obviously in the documentary. How could it not be included? But it does speak to the high level at which this is going on, and the organization. So Epstein and his, I mean, he was getting political protection. We know now that he was an intelligence asset. There doesn't seem to be much question about that. He was protected. Prosecutors have admitted this, that he was protected. That's why he got away with that sweetheart deal, basically house arrest in 2006 after raping a 14-year-old.
Yep.
What else have we learned about Epstein that has been substantiated?
Oh, yeah. And this actually lends us a little bit more evidence to the occult connection, too, because he had clear ties with the occult. And I don't believe that Epstein was just a one-off, like he's just this one crazy guy. Actually, in the film, Jakob Bunyans, who, again, he's one of the real soldiers fighting on the front lines in this fight and has been for quite some time, for years. He says that there's a lot of Epsteins out there. Epstein is just the one that we know about, but there's a lot more. So, you know, you mentioned the protection that he got in 2005. You know, he was being investigated because, like you said, a parent said that Epstein had sexually abused her 14-year-old daughter, and Epstein even pled guilty, but he wasn't convicted until 2008. And even then, it was only for two crimes. He only served a year in custody with extensive work release, despite that federal officials had identified 36 girls, some as young as 14, whom Epstein allegedly abused. But that was let go because, like you said, he was an asset. So and we could talk about the murder suicide thing. I fully believe he was murdered. I don't think there's any real evidence that this was a suicide, and we do deal with that in the movie. But the occult connections, there were several things that were found on his island showing that he most likely had direct ties to the occult, which may have played a part in his rape of children. See, we don't know for sure, because with some pedophiles, when they have occult ties, they could be doing the abuse and the sacrifice of children for ritualistic purposes, you know, to venerate some false god or to gain demonic powers or something like that. Or they could just be a pedophile and they're doing it purely for physical pleasure, which is disgusting to even describe it like that. But with Epstein, it seems like the evidence shifts closer to the occult connection. One of the most obvious examples of this people have seen is the temple that was there. But there was also drone footage that has shown a giant sundial with 13 chairs pointing to what appears to be rune stones. There's gods and goddesses all over the island. I mean, this stuff must have cost a lot of money to do. Of course, he had a lot of money to spend on it. A giant green man from antiquity was there. There were labyrinths, which have connections with child sacrifice according to ancient mythology, specifically Greek, but you can find it elsewhere as well throughout the world. We see certain symbols repeated at Epstein's Zorro Ranch in New Mexico as well. There's a giant rectangle berm area on the island, and we show pictures of this in the movie, but it bore the same symbols as on his Zorro Ranch. It's four paths leading to a circle with a square in the middle of it. So images on the island that were captured in 2013 of this berm area on the island showing the symbols, you can clearly see them. But then in 2017, and this would have been around the time that investigators were starting to close in on Epstein, there was this really sloppy effort made to cover up this berm area, to cover up these symbols, by building a so-called tennis court over the berm area. And we show the pictures, and it's almost laughable how sloppy of a job this is, because they didn't even out the ground. So there's like peaks and valleys all over the place. If you tried to play a game of tennis on this thing, you'd shatter your ankles. It was a really sloppy job. But then in 2019, there were more pictures taken, and we see that the inside of the berm area was completely removed, destroying everything that used to be there. So there was a clear effort to remove these symbols. Now, ancient occult sites discovered around the world have used that same pattern, the pattern that Epstein had covered up, such as the Egyptians, human sacrificing Mayans, that same pattern, four paths leading to a circle encompassing a square. So quite literally. Whether this was purely decorative or not, and I don't think there's any reason to believe that this was just decoration, but even if it was, quite literally, Jeffrey Epstein had at least two occult areas dedicated to human sacrifice. Whether he was doing it or it was just decorative or whatever, these two occult areas were dedicated to either literal human sacrifice or the idea or veneration of it, one on his island, one on his ranch, where he and his high-powered friends are known to have gathered. So that alone is horrifying, and that the government looked the other way on all this stuff because, again, he was an asset. So that makes us wonder how many other assets does the government have? How many other people are out there that right now are being protected, but who may be murdered in the future, many of which we probably will never hear about? I think that kind of thing does happen, and then the public just doesn't hear about it.
There were something like 40 individuals, I guess, that were on the island, participated in these acts with children and minors that are under seal. How does that happen?
Yeah, again, it's because this is the problem with the government. It's totally self-serving. So right now, I think, and you see this in, there's two problems here. We have a self-serving government that wants to see, how can I benefit from this? How can we benefit from this? Let's hold on to the information now, and we'll release it at the right time when it's most beneficial to us. You see this in election cycles, and you see it on both sides, and I don't like it on either side. I want the truth released. I don't care what time it is. I want the truth released when it's discovered. But you'll see this in election cycles on both sides. When one gets information, damning information about the other, they'll wait to release it till it best suits them. I personally don't like that. I understand the strategy, but I think that especially with this, especially when there's actual children's lives at stake, I think playing those games is really dangerous. But we see that in the courts and we see that in the government. So I think that's part of it. But also, our culture just really, really wants to look the other way when it comes to these crimes. You'll get this happens a lot. And I talk about it in I did over a 6-hour series of videos pertaining to the normalization of pedophilia in our country and how botched our legal system is when persecuting these crimes, because typically what you'll see is, a pedophile will be caught, he'll be caught with like child porn or something on his computer, or he'll even be caught raping a child or something. And the child is rescued, thank God. And then at first they'll give the guy like an exorbitant amount of years. They'll say like, well, he is sentenced to like hundreds of years or thousands of years. And that will make the headlines. But then what makes the headlines later is he got out after a year, if even that. A lot of times these guys are released on probation, or they do community service, or like I said, they'll do a year and they'll get off on good behavior. Or our legal system, it's like a lot of show, but it's not, there's not a lot actually backing it up. These people typically aren't prosecuted, even repeat offenders, at least not to the degree that they should be. I mean, I think with this crime, because that can destroy a person's life if they survive the rape, that can destroy their lives. So personally, I think at the very least, life in prison, if not other forms of persecution. But I think those two problems are what really drive this and how this kind of thing happens. And thirdly, I'll say a lot of it too is because we as the American people put up with it. We're starting finally this year in 2020, we're starting to see a real uprising in this country who want to defend children. Now we're seeing an opposition to that as well, with the elites and the mainstream media and the entertainment industry who want to fight against us. But we're finally seeing people waking up and really taking a stand against this stuff. But before this year, by and large, there have always been a few really good people that have fought this fight. But by and large, the country looked the other way on this issue. There hasn't been a great outcrying for these children or for extended sentences for abusers. You'll get people here and there that do. But by and large, a real cultural shift we haven't seen yet. I think we're starting to see that now. And I really hope and pray that Silent Cry can be a good introduction to this issue for those who may not be familiar with it. Or even if you are familiar with it, get the movie and you can learn how to talk to others about it and what appropriate actions we as individuals can take. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to look back as 2020 being really the first year that this cultural shift started and things started to get done. The culture started to shift around and turn in the other direction, and we got back to protecting our kids. I really hope that.
I do so hope as well, although it seems to be so pervasive.
Yes.
One of the things that's pointed out in Silent Cry, The Darker Side of Trafficking, by one of the experts is that these perpetrators, they're so difficult to profile because, again, it's the janitor, it's the CEO of a Fortune 500, it's maybe a congressman, it's your neighbor, it's the Boy Scout leader. It's everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really tough. And one of the most horrifying things, too, that came up in this research is a child can be trafficked without the parent even knowing it. You know, typically when we think of trafficking, we think of kidnapping. And that does happen. But because these people can be anywhere and they are everywhere, I mean, even in small towns, one of the shocking things to me too was I live in a very small town, it's that kind of town where everybody knows everybody, you know? But when I was first looking into this, I saw that areas local to me were having problems with child sex trafficking. There were trafficking rings being busted up, and it made me think, you know, thank God those are being busted up, but how many more are going under the radar? So what happens is a parent can have a child being trafficked and the parent doesn't even know it. Sometimes, this is even worse, the parent is the perpetrator. Sometimes parents will traffic their own children. They'll have children specifically for the purpose of trafficking them. We're starting to see some news stories come out about that now. But the way that this happens, how a parent could be unaware, you know, and Something else that Jakob Bunyans, one of the experts in the movie, said is a child that's most at risk is typically middle class. Parents are still together. They're well off financially, maybe not rich, but just like middle class, you know, where like they have enough money where money can solve problems. So if they don't have a strong relationship with their kid, they'll buy him a cell phone or something. The kid escapes into a cell phone. They're not around. They're not in like a super impoverished poor area where they would see crime all the time, so they don't have a radar for it. Yako says that child is the one that's most at risk, even if the parents are together, because typically the dad is out working or both parents are working, and then neither of the parents are cultivating a really strong trusting relationship with their son or daughter. So the kid gets bored in that type of environment, and they want to go out and make their own money or make a life for themselves. They don't have a really super strong connection with their parents, so they're craving that, and that's where the groomer comes in. You know, that's where the older guy comes in and pretends that he's the girl's boyfriend, and puts on this persona of I'm the only one that really cares about you. I love you. You're beautiful. Your parents don't understand you. I support you. You know, let's get out of here. You and I, let's start our own lives. We just need some money to do it. You know, how can we do that? And then, so over time, this idea about trafficking will come up. You know, the boy won't call it that, of course, the guy, but that's what will happen. So he will be pimping this girl out. And typically, you know, this guy will have many girls he's doing this with. Sometimes the girls are aware of one another, sometimes not. But the girl is allowed to go home. Now, occasionally, sometimes what happens is the girl is threatened. You know, then if it's not like a boyfriend scenario, if it's just an older abusive male scenario, like in the case of Alanka Deaton, who's in the movie, and she tells her whole story in the movie. Absolutely heartbreaking, but it has at least as happy of an ending as that type of story can have in it. But
right, she escaped after 7 years.
Yes,
being passed around, and this all started with her music instructor.
Yep, and she was threatened. Her music manager told her that if she told anybody, that he would kill her mother. And, you know, Alanka loved her mother, didn't want to even take the chance. So Alanka, you know, and she was just a kid herself, so she didn't tell anybody. So that kind of thing happens a lot where the child will be threatened. So the child doesn't want to risk harm coming to her family, so she doesn't tell her parents. What also happens, though, is the girl is actually convinced that this is okay and the parents won't understand because the parents don't have a really trusting relationship with their daughter. And so voluntarily, the girl will keep it secret. You know, really, she's being convinced, she's being tricked, she's being groomed. But the girl thinks that she's doing this out of love or something. So when that happens, a lot of times the parents, they might notice an attitude change with their child, but they think that it's just part of becoming a teenager. You know, it's normal. But this is what happens when there's not a really strong, trusting relationship there. Now, I will say that we live in such a dangerous time that a parent can do everything right. You know, the parents can do everything right and their child can still be a target. So the best that we can really do until we can turn all this around, the best we can do right now is preventative measures to the best of our ability. And we lay several out in the movie. A lot of it revolves around having a really strong family, preferably Christ-centered, because in my opinion, you know, I'm a Christian. I believe that that is going to be the strongest family unit. It doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. You know, bad things can still happen, but it's going to give us the best chances if we have a good, strong, trusting relationship. If a girl knows what a real man is supposed to look like, how a real man behaves, the types of things a real man says, like a real honest man with integrity, she's going to have a harder time being tricked by one of these groomers who typically these guys, I mean, they don't have dads of their own. They don't know. A lot of them don't really know how to even behave as a real man. That's why many of them are abusive. Some are a little more sly about it, but and clever, but a lot of them are abusive. So it'll be harder to trick that child if they have a really strong family unit, because they'll know what trustworthy, honest, good people look like. So that's a really big deal. And we do talk about that in the movie and other things that people can do at home.
Silent Cry, The Darker Side of Trafficking. Josh, how do we screen this?
Absolutely. People can go to skywatchtvstore.com. If they get the movie there, it's a DVD. They'll get it with a lot of other bonus DVDs that we put together that aren't available anywhere else. It's only a $35 donation, and I'll say that the profits from the movie, no matter where people get it, the profits from the movie go to Whispering Ponies Ranch, which is a ministry that that helps kids rescued from child sex trafficking, learn how to live a normal life, you know, be healed, and all sorts of good things. So all the profits go to that organization, Whispering Ponies Ranch, which people can look up online if they want more information. Also, if you want to view it, if you just want to stream it and you only want the movie itself, you can go to Amazon and just stream it on Amazon. And I will ask, if you watch the movie, please leave it a review, because we're trying to convince Amazon right now to feature this in their new releases section. We're trying to get Amazon to suggest it to people. And it's not about my fame or like my fortune or anything with that, because again, profits go to Whispering Ponies Ranch. We want to convince Amazon so we can raise awareness so kids can get more help. You know, the more people that are aware of this problem, the more people can help, and the more children can be rescued. That's what we're really after. So if we can convince Amazon, and the way to do that is by leaving honest reviews. If you feel that we've earned 5 stars, give us 5 stars and tell us why. If you don't, give us what you think that we've earned and tell us why. And if we all do that, I think that can help spread this message around, and we can actually use Amazon to help facilitate that. We can start telling these streaming companies, you know, this is the stuff that you want to start featuring, because this is the stuff that you're not going to lose stock shares if you feature. You know, you'll actually gain more subscribers. You'll gain more money, and ultimately that's all they care about anyway. So it seems like it would be a win-win, but we gotta prove to them that, you know, instead of taking a risk with garbage smut like Cuties and, you know, tanking your stocks, instead of doing that, start featuring some wholesome things. Start featuring Silent Cry. Give it a chance, see what it does, and you'll probably benefit from it as well. So that's what we're trying to do. Please leave a review on Amazon and IMDb. They both go hand in hand. Amazon owns both, so that would be a big help. But those are the two places that you can get it: skywatchtvstore.com and Amazon.
Yeah, people need to get on board with this. Child sex trafficking is the greatest evil being perpetrated today, and it is happening everywhere, right under our nose. And just final quick question. What do you think is going to come to light if Ghislaine Maxwell is allowed to live and perhaps testify?
I'm a little bit of a pessimist on this. I believe that she will be allowed to live and testify, and I think that she'll probably give a couple of names that the country will have their attention on, but it's not going to be it's going to be a drop in the bucket. I think that she has way more information than she's going to release. She has access to more things than will be allowed to be released publicly, because again, the government has a hand in this, and I think it would be too embarrassing. But I think also the government knows they can't just ignore it, because we're living in a time where the American people aren't going to stand for that in the same way they would have 5 years ago. So I think that they're going to try just letting out a couple of names, and they're going to persecute those people maybe, or something's going to happen. And so what we need to do is, when that happens, if I'm right, if that happens that way, we all need to stand up and say that is not enough. That is, we cannot let the government off the hook on this. We need to say that is not enough. She has more information. You're suppressing it. We want to know. If we all stand together and do that, then maybe we can get some more names. But I think what they're going to do is they're going to give us just enough to keep our attention and to kind of satiate us and thinking that we're going to be quiet, you know, because they did that with Epstein. But what I'm hoping is that there's enough people awake now in America that we're not going to fall for it this time. So that's what I think.
Josh Peck, thank you for Silent Cry, The Darker Side of Trafficking, and everything you're doing.
Thank you for having me on. It was a pleasure talking to you. Definitely dark subject, but I really appreciate you having me on to talk about this important issue. Not many people are willing to do that, so I greatly appreciate you.
Okay, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'll be back in a moment to tell you a little bit about an upcoming episode. Here's Colleen Forgas, our full script dispensary manager and nutritional therapist. Hey, Colleen.
Hi, Richard.
Tell me about hair, nails, and skin.
Well, we have a product from Pure Encapsulation, which is called Hair, Skin, Nails Ultra. And what I like about this product is that it contains collagen, and that's a big buzzword, very beneficial for all of those, the skin, hair, and nails, and some other natural vitamins and nutrition. Biotin, for example, is one that's included in this product, and it's great for just making sure we're taking the best care as we can of our hair, skin, and nails.
Hair, Skin, and Nails Ultra, and that's available at my Strange Planet Full Script Dispensary. All you need to do is visit strangeplanet.ca and click on the Full Script Dispensary button and register. Don't forget, all orders receive 10% off, and orders of $50 or more ship for free. These products have not been evaluated by the FDA and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure. If you have a medical concern, please consult your healthcare provider. Coming up next time, George Schwimmer has been investigating and practicing natural methods of healing for the past 42 years. He'll be here to discuss transformational healing and killing cancer. Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review, because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need constant petting.